We don't want you to be a male mom. You're not supposed to be a male mom. You're supposed to be a dad. And dads do things differently and they input in different ways. And that's absolutely critical to your kid. A bit of sperm doesn't make you a dad. It just really doesn't. What makes you a dad is stepping up and doing the job. You're good at this. You're instinctively good at this. Secondly, you are uniquely important. So be empowered by that.
Hi, I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast.
This podcast is dedicated to thoughtful and informative conversations around male fertility, aiming to help you navigate the emotional and medical complexities involved.
We've experienced these challenges ourselves, and we understand the importance of clear guidance, reliable information, and professional support. Each episode, we speak with leading experts, fertility specialists, and individuals who are willing to share their own personal stories to help guide you through your own fertility journey. On this episode, we're delighted to be joined by Dr. Anna Machin. Dr. Machin is an evolutionary anthropologist, renowned for her work on the science of fatherhood. In this episode, she delves into what really makes a father. Is it DNA, instinct, or something more? From bonding without a biological link to the powerful hormonal and emotional shifts that shape dads. Her book, The Life of Dad, was a huge source of information and comfort for me, particularly as a father following the use of donor sperm. I was really keen to get her onto the podcast to discuss this and many other things. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Hello, Anna. Thanks for joining us.
It's lovely to be here.
Oh, it's an absolute honour to have you here. So thank you for coming. And so I guess I just want to start off. It's almost like a quick fire question to start off with, a bit of fact or fiction, but something which is that is very much perpetuated throughout society, kind of social media, etc., is the fact that a woman's ability to parent is innate, whereas men have to work on it a little bit. So is that fact or is it fiction?
It's completely fiction. Without any debate on that. It's a myth that we've perpetuated. And I think it mainly comes down to the fact that when women go through this very profound physiological change, and obviously pregnancy, birth, breastfeeding, we all know is involved with lots of hormonal changes, lots of bonding hormones swimming around, all that kind of thing. And so we've always had this myth that because of that, women instinctively know what to do. As a mum myself, I can tell you that's absolutely rubbish. But no, so what happens is actually both parents undergo hormonal and brain changes. In fact, the brain changes are very similar. Obviously, the hormonal changes are slightly different. So they both go through those changes to prepare them, to prime them to be good at parenting. So actually, they both start on a par in terms of instinct, and they both start on a par in terms of learning. I think we all know that when you're a new parent, whether you're a man or a woman, there's a lot to learn, and it's a really steep learning curve. But you do actually, as a man, have that core instinct of what to do as well. So sometimes I do say to men when they're getting a bit in a pickle, because maybe they've read so much or taken so much advice, or they've got so many voices telling them what to do, just go with your instinct, because actually, instinctually, you can do this.
That's something that I've either heard you say or I read in your book, but it's trust your instincts as well, and
absolutely,
don't be afraid to put it across.
Absolutely. No, that's absolutely right. Because you have been primed to do this. Evolution's amazing. It's not going to... Human fathers are really rare. 5% of mammals have investing fathers. We're the only 8. And it doesn't cause something like human fatherhood, which is so rare and caused a massive upheaval in social behaviours and physiology and brains and everything without actually giving you a bit of a chance to be good at it. So it's selected for those changes in the brain and those hormonal changes that make men as good as they possibly can be at this job.
Yeah, I remember distinctively being really worried about it, but having that natural kind of that instinct of, I knew I wasn't going to know it all in one. As soon as the baby's given to me, it's, oh, I know everything. And I remember being quite fearful of it. Because especially what we've been through in terms of trying to get a child and society's view of it, of maybe what a father should be.
Yes.
Do men find it harder to transition into fatherhood than, say, a mother does into motherhood because of the way they think and the way we are put together?
I think possibly overall, yes. They certainly take longer to do it. So a woman, it would take about 9 months post-birth to really feel comfortable in your identity as a mother and competent at what you're doing. With men, it tends to take about twice as long. But we don't know whether that's because of the way society works here, where men tend to not be the primary carer. They're in effect not really given the opportunity to become competent as quickly as women at doing it. So actually, we do need to do some more research on dads who have taken extensive paternity leave, for example, or indeed primary carers of children, to see actually whether that's actually a lack of opportunity to become competent and to become comfortable rather than the fact that men just happen to take longer to do it. Yes, it's a massive shift in identity for both parents becoming a parent. It's a big life transition. And I think the problem is for men is we don't provide them enough support during that transition. Again, the woman's going through this very obvious change and everything's very mummy focused and baby focused. Now, we don't actually consider how difficult it is for men to go through this phenomenal transformation in their lives without anybody really supporting them, asking them how they are, having that discussion with them about, okay, what kind of dad do you want to be? Where are you getting your ideas from? And very few people actually allow men to have that conversation.
Yeah, yeah. I remember my son was two before I thought, I feel like I know what I'm doing now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Part of that might be because he became more responsive to me, I think. And like you said, it's about the opportunity. My dad brain was, he needs mum more than he needs me. I'll just help out where I can. And then as he became more of a toddler, we had a bit more playtime and things like that. He became more interested in me. That I can definitely resonate with that kind of 18-month to 2 years kind
of. Yeah, and you are actually a long line of 500,000 years of evolution of the fact that men evolved, fathers evolved 500,000 years ago to take the toddlers and teenagers off mum's hands. That's what they evolved to do. Hmm. And I think dads are still doing that today. I think the toddler stage in particular is absolutely critical for the father-child interaction, partly because as the dad, you are actually the primary person behind their development at that point, not mum. It's you, because they're going to start going out into the world. Hmm. And we know that's what dads do, is that they scaffold their children to go into the world. So all the bits that they have the stronger influence in terms of behavior and development are all in that social sphere. You talked about play, and I'm sure we'll probably talk about play at some point, but absolutely, you're echoing, yeah, 500,000 years of evolution and the fact that at that point you stepped forward, really stepped forward, and you're like, now it's my moment and it's my primary moment and I'm going to start really interacting with this kid and feeling like I'm really inputting into their life.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear. When I read your book and I was reading through it, there was so much of it that was like, oh, that's exactly what happened to me. I remember that at that point. I remember this at that point. It's an amazing process that I think we go through unconsciously. We don't, we it just happens naturally.
Yeah, absolutely, it happens naturally. And again, it's, I'll bang on about evolution all the time, but it's down to the fact you've evolved to do that. We don't want you to be a male mom. You're not supposed to be a male mom. You're supposed to be a dad, and dads do things differently and they input in different ways, and that's absolutely critical to your kid that you do that.
I think several times it worried or frustrated my wife as well. When he's 2 years old and I flip him onto the bed to wrestle him. She's only two. I'd be fine.
Yeah. And that's the point. He will be fine. And the fact is, not only were you building, continuing to build a really deep bond with him, because we know play is absolutely essential, you are really strengthening your attachment. There's some really interesting work that's just been done. We've always known that dads attach to their children slightly differently to mums. It's just as powerful a love, but it's different. And we've always known it's to do with nurture and challenge, not just nurture. But there's some really interesting work coming out now that goes beyond that and says, actually, it's all based on stimulation and the stimulation of play. So the kids who have the strongest attachments to their fathers are the ones where dad is doing that really strong stimulatory play. And that is the best thing you can do to get a secure attachment to your child. So I know it looks scary and I know a lot of mums struggle with it, but actually it's absolutely critical that it happens.
That's great. You've just given me the green flag to wrestle. So it's fine.
I've become aware of your work and read your book. I'm the same as well. I'm like, don't worry. It's research backed. I've got this.
Safe. Yeah, obviously don't come to me if anybody like injures themselves. But, yeah.
So you mentioned how men and fathers do create those bonds. Is there any way that we can start doing that before birth?
Absolutely. And again, this is really interesting because I think a lot of men struggle, and certainly the men that I've followed, it's very exciting those 9 months. It's that mixture, I'm sure, of excitement and fear and anxiety and pressure and joy and so many different things. But I think it's quite hard to feel close because obviously, yeah, you're not feeling the baby's not in you. You're not going through those changes. And so for a long time, it was felt that really dads only became dads when baby appeared. But we now know that prenatal bonding is really critical. And if you spend time putting effort into prenatal bonding, not only does it mean that your bond following birth will come quicker, but it also means the health of that bond, the quality of that bond will be stronger. And so it's really important that dads do that. And there's lots of different ways you can do that. You can obviously sing and talk to the baby. You can put your hand on it and feel the baby pushing back against you. Obviously, you need your wife or your partner to tell you when this is happening. But when it is, really put your hand on there because the baby is aware of you. So put your hand on there, talk to the baby, let it hear your voice. Because hearing is one of the first things that develops in a baby. Spend time daydreaming. Our imaginations are really powerful. So we know that men who spend their time daydreaming about their baby, what's it going to be like? What are you going to do together? What are you looking forward to? What kind of character do you think it'll be? What do you want to introduce it to in your world? All those sorts of things. We know men who do that, again, have a stronger bond after birth because they've started this bonding process in their mind. And recently, a really interesting piece of research has come out, which I really hope people will adopt in the scanning room, is we know scans are really important for dads. That, you know, the first time you see the baby on the screen, it's actually real to you. But there's been this wonderful piece of research been done recently, which is about actually encouraging dads in the scanning room, talk to the baby, put their hand on the bump and see the baby respond to them.
Wow.
Because if you see that, you're starting that interaction. You're seeing actually this baby wants to talk to me or wants to be with me or wants to feel my touch. And you have to train scanners properly to do this because they're very good at saying, okay, now baby's doing this, baby is responding to you, or baby doesn't like that very much, maybe do this. And it's starting to understand the baby as a character, as an individual, but also starting that interaction where you actually see the baby come back to you and go, yeah, hi, dad, I can hear you, I can feel your touch. And I think dads who've been involved in that study, apparently it was incredibly powerful. So we have to start actually encouraging, if we can, in the scan room, dad not just being the bystander looking at the screen, but actually physically getting involved in the whole process.
Yeah, I think I wish I'd known that. I wish I'd perhaps done it more. But also, I think generally, there needs to be more encouragement fathers throughout the pregnancy stage as well, because it does always feel, and how's mum getting on? How's she doing? How's the reflux or indigestion? I can't even remember. The morning sickness. It's all the questions about her. How the hell am I doing?
Exactly. And it's really critically important because, again, we know that one of the major factors for men in terms of how well they transition to becoming a father, in terms of things like good mental health, is actually how they're treated by the healthcare team. So if men are included, if their worries, their questions, their concerns are valued and they're responded to, if somebody just says to them, how are you doing? Do you have any questions about what's going on? Do you have any concerns? We know that men then feel much more empowered and much more part of the process. And it's so frustrating for those of us who work in this sphere, because I've been doing it for over 15 years now, and I am still hearing the same stories. Dad's feeling excluded. And it's really not that hard to include them. I know, particularly in the NHS, our midwives, our health visitors are very pushed. And I understand that, but it's actually about changing a culture and saying, actually, this man is a co-parent. He's not a secondary parent. He's not there just to support mum. He's actually there as a player in the game, and he's going through his own psychological and biological changes. He's going to take on this incredibly important role, which is very important for his child and the family as a functioning unit. And so we have to start saying, okay, put you both on equal footing and ask you and give you the same support. And it's, I don't know how we're going to finally change it. There are some very good practices out there now doing it, some very good healthcare teams, but there are still some who just, it's like hitting your head against a brick wall, to be honest.
Small changes, hopefully, will bring us along, but hopefully soon. And things like, personally, my own experience, it was a little bit skewed because it was lockdown. I think I can't lose count of which one. I think the first lockdown, then they were born in the second, but obviously our podcast is all about men and fertility. Kieran and I both went through fertility challenges. And in my case, it was very much a closed door of becoming a biological father. So after doing a lot of soul searching and really coming to grips with who I was and what I had to pass on as a father, other than DNA, and actually realized that was less important to me, my wife and I elected to use donor sperm. But then it's like got to this point of extreme acceptance to do that, which I think is the right thing to do, because it's not just going to put a band-aid over infertility. It's key to get to that point of acceptance. But then once we became pregnant with twins, I then started having a lot of doubt and anxiety of, have I done the right thing? Am I going to bond with them? And I felt that external aspect that we've talked about, because it wasn't always, the question wasn't there of how's dad? And
yeah. You
know, okay, for some of the scans, I couldn't go in, but from about 12 weeks on, I could start going in because we had earlier scans because of the fact that they were IVF babies. But then, and that carried on, that anxiety throughout the pregnancy, if I'm completely honest, it didn't go away. But then I had somewhat of a baptism of fire. My wife had a complicated birth and was very poorly for the first 2 to 3 weeks after. We were then in the second lockdown. And so we couldn't rely on any support. And it was the best thing that could have happened to me because I was in at the deep end. I remember I had a little bit longer in hospital post-birth because she was in the resus ward for, is that what they call it? I can't remember what it's called now. I'm sure it was. But yeah, she didn't go to the maternity ward for a little bit longer. And so I was having to engage with the midwives and say, how do I do this? How do I do that? Mm. I was all in. And then going home and realizing it was just one of the most daunting things that's ever happened, or probably ever happened to us, to think there's these two little things that are completely dependent on us. Mm. Me, and I, by the time my wife became a bit more physically capable of getting involved, doing things like nappy changes, it was such an immense form of pride for me to be like, here, come, I'll show you.
Yeah, you showed
I'm over here.
Exactly. And I think that's amazing. And it's a story I've heard from other men who've been in the same position of very ill mom and having to take over the babies and stuff. And that's same with you. They say part of it is the most horrific experience. But actually, suddenly you are the primary carer. You are the one. And that means, as you say, the bonding is immense and quick because dads do most of their bonding through interaction. So you're immediately interacting with that baby. You're immediately, you are it. And also just that competence you experience, because if it hadn't been you, they would have showed mum how to change a nappy probably, and they would show mum how to bath the baby, and they would have, and you would probably have been in the corner. But that's how we should be treating dads. And I'm so sorry you were anxious during pregnancy, because somebody should have picked up on that.
Hmm.
We shouldn't have this thing where men's mental health around the perinatal period is just ignored, because it's so serious. It's so serious for the dad. But it's also serious for the bond he forms with his baby, for the development of that baby, for the family functioning unit anyway. And it is pretty outrageous, actually, that men are still suffering in silence and nobody is actually saying, how are you doing? What can I do to help you? Because actually, if you'd been given some information during pregnancy about things like bonding and about actually genetic relatedness is the least important thing ever. I mean, it just is. It's just not important in terms of building a bond. Then that might have helped you to have known that actually you're going to be okay.
And not having to remind the midwife at every single appointment that we were using donor sperm.
No, which really isn't nice, is it?
Come
and
on,
it shouldn't,
read the
and
notes.
It shouldn't happen, because also the point is, in that room, you were the dad. It doesn't matter where the sperm comes from, to be honest. It's completely irrelevant. You are the dad. That's your role. And that's how you're spoken to in that room. And why that's even vaguely relevant.
Yeah. It's just irrelevant. It was odd that it would be the terminology that she used. I can't remember what exactly now, but yes.
We, unfortunately, in this country and generally in the West, we have a bit of an obsession with biological fatherhood.
Mm.
And you will get people saying things like real dad. Mm. I find the horrendous. A bit of sperm doesn't make you a dad. It just really doesn't.
Yeah.
What makes you a dad is stepping up and doing the job. And there's so much evidence to support that. The fact that we have social fatherhood around the world. So social fatherhood are people who step up and do the job who are not involved in conception at all. So they might be adoptive, they might be step, they might be an uncle, a grandfather, a friend, a teacher. Some kids have whole teams of them. And in other cultures, they are fully accepted. There are some cultures where the biological dad is out the picture pretty early on, not interested. And that's accepted, and that's who dad is. And I think it's a real shame that here we seem to think that donating a bit of sperm makes you a dad. Of course it doesn't. Humans are hugely complicated to raise. They have to be raised by somebody who is fully on board, fully in with it. And that's who dad is, the guy who does the job.
Men have been left out of the fertility conversation for far too long. But at Nexus Fertility, we're changing that. Whether you're just starting out, in the thick of treatment, or figuring out what to do next. Nexus is here for you. We've built a community just for men, with expert-led webinars, peer-to-peer chat, and support groups, and an honest conversation from guys who have been there. No judgment, no pressure, just support on your terms. You don't have to go through this alone. Head to nexusfertility.com to join the free community today. That's Nexus, N-E-X-Y-S, fertility.com to join the community today. You deserve a space like this.
So why is it in the West that we've got to that point then in comparison to the rest of the world?
I think it's partly because we have this very Victorian idea still of the nuclear family, of it being a parent, a mum and dad and some kids. Whereas in the other cultures, family is a very extended thing, and they still very definitely, children are not just raised by their parents. They're raised by many people in the community. And that's how we evolve to be, actually, is that we're supposed to raise our children with lots of involvement from lots of other people. You'll get some cultures where a kid would have maybe four or five dads, one of whom might be the biological dad, but might not be, but they all serve different roles in that. So one might be the teacher, one might be the carer, one might be the one who teaches them all the job of work, or one might be the one who supports them in terms of resilience and mental resilience. And they all come together and help that child. And that's really how humans are supposed to be brought up. We've just got this cultural thing where we've reduced it right the way down.
In that kind of circumstance, in terms of those kind of cultures, you might not know the answer to this, but does the child want to know who their father is? They don't care.
They don't care. They honestly don't care, because they're brought up in a culture where that's not valued particularly. Mm. It's not something that's valuable, because they understand that's not what makes somebody a father.
Yeah.
They've been brought up in a culture where every single generation for generations have been brought up by five dads, or this dad, or my uncle, or my grandfather, and that's how it works. So they're not interested, because that's not how they define dad.
When you think about it, it makes perfect sense. And actually their culture says this, because of the way we perceive fathers in Western culture, we have this view.
Yeah.
And actually it's completely incorrect and against a lot of what nature says, really.
Well, it is. If you think the majority of what influences a child in terms of things like kind of what we'd call the important stuff, so stuff like social behavior, the really complex cognitive stuff, that develops after birth. So it's not actually, it doesn't have a huge genetic influence at all. The biggest influence is the person who cares for you. And that's who the biggest influence is. So yes, an obsession with genetics is a little bit weird, to be honest. Obviously, some people say it matters because of hereditary illness, and okay, maybe. But in terms of actively being a father, actively being that child, the biggest influence on development, isn't genetic. The biggest influence on development is the environment in which you are raised.
Yeah.
Hmm. And that's, I think life is wonderful in that people find their way into other people's lives when we often need them the most. And that's when I came across you and your work, is when I needed that. Don't get me wrong, it would have helped immensely, profoundly throughout the pregnancy to hear everything that you've mentioned so far. But actually, about a year in to my journey as a father, I was really like wondering, and just, I didn't know what my place was. I'm not a disciplinarian by nature. The only time I ever really raise my voice is when there's literally like safety, a risk issue. And it works. It has that. It gets for kids' attention, because they're so not used to me raising my voice. So I was like, I'm not that. What am I? I look around and I think about the kind of generations before, what they pushed as being a father. And I'm not that. And then I heard you, and it was everything I needed to hear, because I realized that actually I was already doing it and doing it very well, but without really, naturally, which is.
And I think one of the
really
great sadnesses, difficulties for dads is in a way, in one sense, it's great, is that dads are less restricted by biology in terms of choosing their role, because they don't go through pregnancy and childbirth, which is actually biologically quite restricting in terms of choosing a role for mums. But for dads, so there's a freedom, but actually with that freedom, it means that you are very open to what society tells you you should be. So things like, yes, you should be the breadwinner and the disciplinarian. And that is still a mantra we definitely hear in this society. And I think men are at that point now where There's like this really difficult tension between us lot who do research saying to you, you're important, you should be involved, you've got this amazing influence, you're a unique character, which is all wonderful. But then we put that on you and go, there you go. So you've got to be really involved. And then you've got the rest of society, particularly the employment world, going, yeah, but you've still got to go out and earn some money because that's your job. And then, so at the moment, you're being told to do two actually things that don't really fit together very well. And that, I think, is tough. I think that's tough to live up to what you want to be as a father, but still try and do that in a very conservative culture. It's still a very conservative culture in terms of, particularly in the workplace, it's still not seen as necessarily particularly masculine to be a hands-on dad, which is a real shame.
Yeah, when you have to go back to work after 2 weeks after your child's been born, it's one of the worst feelings I've ever felt, like leaving that house. I was like, I don't want to leave. I want to be here. This is where I want to be, but I can't. I'm forced. If I don't leave, I'll be disciplined because I haven't turned up. A lot needs to change in society and the view of dads. So much. Completely.
And I think in terms of dads themselves and in terms of, we're starting to change that narrative amongst dads themselves. And I think dads are more empowered now to be able to say, I know I'm important and I know where I want to be. And so I'm going to try and put that pressure on. But the problem is we still very much definitely have governments who don't support fathers and a workplace culture. And we've got to find a way to change that. And it's really hard because it's a very ingrained culture. That dads are secondary and not really that terribly important, when in fact, they're vital.
There is, even outside of work, one of the other stereotypes that men have to be breadwinners. My wife and I were on the same wage up until the point of pregnancy. So there was a conversation about shared parental leave. And the other problem is, like all of the kids' clubs, it's all mothers there. Yeah. And I would go, and I'm a strong person, especially after what we went through to get there, and I just walked off a duck's back. But I would see the looks and the whispers, and actually what I'm pretty sure they're probably saying is, wow, he's smashing it. Look, he's here with twins. I can't even get my other half to come here with one.
Yeah.
And that's what I told myself anyway, and I'm pretty sure it probably was.
That's probably what was. I remember when I had my kids and we used to go to a toddler group, and I remember a dad turning up with it, and we were just all hero worshipping him, to be absolutely honest. But it is really hard to walk into a room full of women and babies and feel that you belong there. And you will get some. Unfortunately, there is a, and I always get in trouble for this, but anyway, there is a sector of the mothering identity, which is quite gatekeepery, and which is about, no, this is mum's job. Parenting is mum's job. You don't get to take that away from us. And so we're going to make that a little bit difficult for you. Either that you're never going to be as good as us, or make you feel unwelcome somewhere, and that's a real shame. That's a real shame, because I think we should be able to open it up to everyone, and it's not a competition between mums and dads. It shouldn't be.
Quite often I find that the happiest children are the ones that have the equal balance. They have mother and a father present in life, and there's no competition. I do my bit and Jen does her bit, my wife, and sometimes we both get it wrong, sometimes we both get it right.
Absolutely. And as long as you're kind to each other when you get it wrong, because it's a really tough gig, I think it's absolutely, it's perfect. And we have to allow dads to be dads. I think that's really important. We've all done it, and I'm guilty of it. I didn't start researching dads until I'd had my first child. I remember going out, I think, to go and do a work job when my daughter was about 8 months old. And writing that annotated thing going, so at 3:02, you have to do this. And then at 3:04, you have to do this. And it was ludicrous. Utterly ludicrous. Yeah, so I'm guilty as much as anybody else. You've got to allow, dads are instinctively good at this, but they will do it differently. Yeah. And that is actually the point. And that's really good for your kid.
I often say that if my wife goes away for the weekend or something and she'll come back, she'll be like, how is it expecting the house to be on fire? And
yes.
And I'm like, genuinely, it's been so chilled. I'm like, you're the problem.
That's much easier on my end.
I just want to take it back a bit to something that came up. Obviously, I was discussing my personal situation. I had a bit, when they were born, I've thrown it in the deep end. But hopefully that doesn't happen for most people, and in your normal scenario where it can be a little bit harder for men to get a look in at first, when, because obviously babies are so dependent on mum for many reasons. What ways can blokes really start to form those early bonds in those early days?
It is hard because dads build their bonds through interaction. So they don't have that head start of all the hormones that come with particularly childbirth. It is hard because, as we all know, newborn babies don't do anything and they certainly don't really react to you. And yes, if your partner's breastfeeding, it's very hard initially because of how long it takes to breastfeed at that stage. But what I always say, two things. First of all, start immediately in the birth room and absolutely insist upon your skin to skin. I'm afraid there are some teams that still are not good at offering that to dad. So demand it. Absolutely demand that baby be placed upon you at some point soon after birth, because that's really critical, because you're going to start that. Babies are very sensory beings and you want them to feel the touch of your skin, smell what you smell, hear what you sound like, that very early on, and carry on doing that every single day. Okay, so basically stuff the baby up your shirt, and that's really critical. So I think some people do it in the birthing room and never do it again. No, it's really important. So first of all, do that. Secondly, try and find something that is yours. It might just be you bathe baby every night before bed, or you do the little bedtime routine. Baby massage is amazing. I know it sounds a bit weird, but there's lots of YouTube videos you can, and use a bit of lavender oil to help baby calm down. And it's brilliant baby massage because it's based on touch. It gives you and baby a massive surge of bonding hormones, which really starts kickstarting that bond. And secondly, it's amazingly good for your mental health, actually, because it releases all these positive things. It's one of the only behaviors and interventions that seems to be preventative of male postnatal depression. So it's really good to do. So find something that's yours. Eve, or every day, sit baby on you and read him or her a story. I know it sounds a bit strange because babies have no idea what's going on. I can't actually focus, but it really does. It's a good routine to get into. So start doing things like that. Find something that is yours. If your partner is not breastfeeding, obviously you can get involved in feeding with the bottle. If she will express some milk, brilliant, because feeding is a very intimate thing to do. So if you can do that, again, that's really good. So just find that thing that's yours. And it does feel difficult to start with. And we might talk about the delay in bonding that a lot of men experience, but once you've got baby smiling at about 6 weeks, and then they start giggling and they start babbling, and then at 3 months, you can start a little bit of gentle play, and then at 6 months, you can start a bit of rough and tumble play. It does speed up. It does speed up, and you will find your niche. But yeah, it is really hard initially.
Yeah, it was interesting what you said about the skin to skin, and that some practitioners still now find it surprising when you do it automatically. So when my son was born, my wife told me to do it, because I wasn't really sure. She goes, this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
When my daughter was born, nearly 5 years later, my wife hemorrhaged. So she had to go off to theatre to be sorted out. Mm. And I was handed a baby, my baby, obviously.
Yes.
And I was like, what do I do? And the first thing was, what I thought was, this baby's what, 5 minutes old.
Yeah.
And I just took my shirt off, laid down, I laid on the sofa or on the chair, and the midwife came in and she double took, like as if to say, you're doing skin. I was like, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. And I did it every day for about a month, 2 months. On that day, I even got to the point I wouldn't leave her. So I needed the loo, so I took her with me.
Yeah, why not? Exactly.
And they were like, you can't take her to the loo. I was like, she's mine. Like,
do you want to walk?
I do what I want. But it was that, like, skin to skin. And we also, every night when I got home from school, because I'm a teacher, I would take her for an hour because it was my time, me and Enya's time.
Yep.
And it was regimented. It didn't matter what happened. The world could be burning down. I'd walk in and I'd be like, where is she? Even though we had Sebi at the time, who was five, we explained to him that when daddy got home, he'd have time with Enya because Enya hadn't seen him all day and she was new to the world. And it was just building that routine in. And it definitely helped. She tells me what to do now most of the time, but we've got a strong bond.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's brilliant that you did that. It's absolutely brilliant. But men should actually be encouraged to do it. It shouldn't be something that you have to be told that you have to know you should do it. It should be something that we know, because it's the most powerful way of bonding.
Yeah.
It's so powerful.
So,
and also after birth, it does things like help baby, because they can't regulate their temperature. It's actually incredibly good for them in terms of regulating temperature and all those sorts of things. It's a valuable thing to do.
And both of mine used to get very cold very easily. So just having them on me.
Yeah.
Well, you do live up north.
It's
cold.
We've talked about hormones. When a baby is born, what hormone changes occur in a father and what role do those hormone changes play in terms of their development as a father? Because it's something I think I really noticed in how I felt.
Yeah, a lot of men do, I think. So the big headline one is the drop in testosterone that occurs. And that happens because testosterone is great if you're looking for a mate. It makes you very competitive in the mating market. It makes you more attractive, all those sorts of things. But it's not really something we want around when you've had a kid, because we need you to focus on the family and not be thinking, I might run after that person over there. It drops. We still don't know what the mechanism is, but it does it. And it does it in most mammals, reptiles, birds, where there are investing fathers, you will get this drop in testosterone. And what it does is it not only makes you less interested in the world outside your family, but it also does a couple of things. First of all, we know men with lower testosterone, regardless of whether they're dads or not, are much more responsive and much more motivated to care for babies. So first of all, the drop makes you a much more on the ball parent. And secondly, it boosts the effects of both dopamine and oxytocin, which are some of the key bonding hormones, because very high testosterone blocks those. So we don't want you to have very high testosterone. So that's the big picture. And I think a lot of men do feel that. After having a baby, a lot of men say they do feel more emotional. They do feel much more empathy than they did before. Particularly, you're watching the news or something about a kid or something like that on it. So it does seem to have an impact on emotions and on your cognition, actually losing some of that testosterone. The other things that go on, so you get an increase in a hormone known as vasopressin. And vasopressin is actually quite important in lesser mammals, not as important in human males as it's supposed to be, but it's involved in things like protection. So you get an increase in vasopressin to make you more aware of risk and protection. We generally see a general increase in oxytocin over the first 6 months of post-birth life. And obviously, oxytocin is a really important bonding hormone. So that's not only making you more bonded to your baby, but probably also making you more bonded to your partner, because we all know how tough those first months are. So having that boost in oxytocin is probably a good thing. And what we also see is actually, even though parenting is really stressful, particularly in the first few weeks when you're trying to work out what the hell you're doing, we actually see a drop in cortisol in most parents. Particularly, we see real drops in cortisol when you're holding your baby. So cortisol actually drops even though you're feeling stressful. But what actually happens is what we call the responsive cortisol. So the cortisol that comes very quickly in a peak when something like dangerous happens that you need to respond to, that becomes much quicker. So you become much more aware of responding quickly to risk and things that have gone wrong in your environment. So there's this whole cocktail of things happening to you when you become a parent for the first time.
I know the answer. I just want to cover it off. But is that the same for non-biological fathers, social fathers? Same changes?
Absolutely. So all of these changes occur via interaction. They've got nothing to do with whether or not you're biologically involved in conception at all. And that's a really powerful thing. So it basically means any man can step up and do this job, because by interacting with your child, you will see these changes. And we also know if you stop interacting with your child for whatever reason, so the testosterone will stay low unless you stop interacting with your child. So if for whatever reason, cease contact with your child, your testosterone will go back up. So it's very much an interaction based phenomenon.
Yeah. In terms of that interaction, there's something that you've mentioned a couple of times, particularly for fathers and children, is rough and tumble play.
Yeah.
What is it that's particularly important for fathers and children about that? And why is it so prevalent, especially in the West?
Okay. So rough and tumble play, we all know what I'm talking about, but we're talking about that really vigorous, very physical play, wrestling, running, jumping, throwing kids around the room, tickling, laughing, all that kind of thing. And it's something that we predominantly see in fathers. Every now and then you'll see it in mothers, but it's very rare. And it's a particular way of playing, which is very stimulatory. And it's got two really important roles in dads. First of all, it makes the bond really fast and tight very quickly, because it's so physical, involves lots and lots of touch, lots and lots of exercise, basically, lots and lots of laughter. All of those things release a hormone known as beta endorphin, which is actually the hormone of long-term love. So it releases all of those really well. Because it's very fast and very physical, it's really good for time-poor fathers. You can get a really quick bond effect in a relatively short period of time. And that's why we think we see it mostly in the West, is because in other countries where parents or fathers spend much more time on a daily basis actually in physical contact with their children, they don't actually need this mechanism in the same way because they'll be in constant touch with their children anyway. So they don't need it. So it's a Western phenomenon. But the other thing it's important for is the start of the input into development, the unique input that fathers have. So I mentioned earlier that you scaffold the child's entry into the world beyond the family. So you are the parent who is going to make sure that this kid is prepared for the big bad world. And Rough and Tumble Play is brilliant for that. Because first of all, it's all about relationships. It's about reciprocity. It's about the give and take. It's about play. So you're starting to learn to handle relationships. You're starting to learn to read another person, to empathize with them, because it's supposed to be fun. And if you go too far, you have to know when it's not fun for the other person. So you learn to start reading people. You're learning very much about risk and challenge. So assessing risk, having quite a challenging play way of doing it, overcoming that challenge, maybe falling over, picking yourself up, dusting yourself off. So it's starting to build the mental resilience that children are going to need to survive in the world. You're teaching them that you will fail. Things will be challenging. Things will be risky. This is how you need to learn to deal with them. So as a developmental tool, it's really powerful. And it's the first step that you as a father are going to contribute to that going into the social world. And now we know that actually it's really fundamental for the attachment between children and fathers. So whereas we would measure nurturing input in a mother to try and work out the attachment with the child, and for a father, actually what we're looking for is the stimulatory interaction between the child and the father, because that is going to be the basis of your attachment.
It's incredible. It's just, it's so good to hear it because it's so true. As you were saying, I was just this evening, I got home from work and my wife went to the gym. And for that hour, pretty much the whole time, it was Rough and Tumble madness.
Yeah.
And
they,
it's like they know they are waiting for me to get out of my work clothes. Just so it's like, that's the signal. Let's go.
You know that the amazing research is that children have evolved to seek you out to do that, not their mum. Because when we interact with our children, we get peaks in oxytocin. And they get peaks in oxytocin from different things. So if my children interact with me, the peak that we both get will come from me nurturing them. So when I play with them, they won't get such a peak and I won't get such a peak. Whereas with you, with your children, that peak comes from play. So they are evolved to seek you out because they get a bigger neurochemical reward from playing with you than they do from their mum. So they're going to seek you out to be the play buddy, basically. And that's why we actually have to really legitimize play and say it's not just dad being fun dad. He's not doing it because it's easier than, I don't know, changing a nappy or whatever. He's doing it because actually he's co-evolved with his child to do that behavior because it's so critical to that child.
It's really interesting. If my children are hurt, they go to mum for that nurture. That most of the time, they just want to rumble. And they just want
to
play. And it winds my wife up loads, but they'll be like, he's the fun one. Yeah. He plays with that. And they'll say it, like, he plays. But it doesn't mean that they don't love her any less. She just plays a different role.
But that's the point, is that your roles are supposed to complement each other, not mirror each other. So she has a role. And I know, again, as a mum, it's quite frustrating sometimes. You're like, you're not the boring one, but you're kind of like, the one who like remembers the right cereal and all that kind of stuff. Whereas dad is the one that, it's going to be lots and lots of fun and we're going to go and do lots of fun things. But it's supposed to be like that.
We quite often get lined up on the sofa and all three of us get told off. You will sit there and not move. All right, we just sit there for a bit while dinner's cooked or something else is going. Generally, when she's trying to organise us, and we're like, no, we're just going to snap into a bit of play, and we end up 10 minutes late because actually we've ended up like rolling around on the floor, just messing around. And do you know what? Sean said it already, but it's like the best part of my day. Like, I love it. I love it. I literally love it. It's everything I wished for when I was becoming a dad or wanted to be a dad.
Yeah.
Those moments where, you know, I've got one pinned down tiggling and the other one's in a headlock and I'm like, but everyone's laughing and giggling wonderful times. And now that like they're both getting to the size where I can really pick them up.
And that will carry on. It will change as you get older. And when they go into teenagehood, it might change a little bit. But it's always really important that dads do things with their kids. It's a very active relationship. And so it's very important that you always carry on doing that in some way.
It's so validating hearing it, the research backing it, because I remember once a friend and I, his family were down staying with us, and we were watching our wives do arts and crafts with all of our kids, and we were like, literally try and do stuff like that, but it just never, I'd lose interest. They can sense that I'm not involved, I'm not in, just not invested in it. And one of my kids could be like, can we go outside and play football? I'm like, I'm there. Where's my shoes?
Yes.
Let's go.
Yeah,
it could be windy, rainy. It's just, that's what I'm all about, and I'll do it until they stop. I'll just keep going. And it's great to hear it, that it's backed up by science and nature.
Absolutely.
When we go and watch my son play rugby, my wife just sits there and like creases up. Oh, goodness. Something. He's going to get hurt. And I'm stood on the touchline going, oh, hit him harder. Just because I just love the contact. I love the contact. I love the physicalness. Yeah. As you've said, it's that, as Sean said, it's that just someone saying, yeah, it's all right. This is what we're meant to be like as fathers.
Absolutely.
So obviously rough and tumble is amazing. But as they get older, obviously they need a bit more scaffolding in life, shall we call it, or foundations put down. What can a father do as a child gets older and is no longer a toddler? How would relationships change then?
Really, you're getting the same sort of place until your kid becomes a teenager, pretty much. And then when they become a teenager, all teenagers shift their main attachment from their parents anyway to their friends, to their peers. But it's still a really important time for dad to be involved, because you are the one that sort of is this social scaffolding person. You are critical in two ways when they're teenage. First of all, you're very critical to their mental health, because you have been the one that's been teaching them resilience, particularly through things like rough and tumble play as they've grown up. It's actually the attachment that you have to your child that is the biggest predictor of how well they're going to surf their mental health during teenagehood and young adulthood. So we know that dads who do have secure attachments to their children are much less likely to have things like depression and anxiety. They're much more likely to have high self-esteem and not report things like loneliness. And it is because mental health is generally something that manifests itself in the social world as a result of social interaction and anxieties about that social interaction. So because you are the guy who's going to do that. And doing things with your kids is still very important as the father of a teenager. Again, studies show that teenagers who go through this period effectively and then grow into sort of good functioning, healthy adults with good mental health, it's those ones whose dads still found a way to spend one-on-one time with them in some way. And it's always doing something. So it might just be washing the car. It might be going to watch a rugby match. It might be cooking the Sunday lunch. It might be taking the dog for a walk. But that sort of interaction with your child as a teenager is really important. Now, it can be hard because teenagers can be pretty disgusting. So sometimes they do push their parents away a lot, but they do need you. So as a parent, you just have to be, I'm here. I'm still here. I'm here. And be that rock who they can come back to. What's really interesting, again, is research looking at particularly teenage daughters and their fathers. The research coming out now about fathers and daughters is fascinating, because we've always had this thing of boys need a male role model in their life. And they certainly do. Absolutely. But actually, dads, in a way, have more of an influence on their daughters, particularly on their daughters going forward to have happy, functioning, good lives. So there's a lot of data now showing that kids, daughters who have good relationships with their fathers, good attachments, whose fathers are sensitive, good sensitive parents, they tend to achieve more academically. They tend to have much better mental health. They tend to have much healthier relationships going forward in life, because you are the model of that relationship. And I'm not just talking about romantic relationships. I'm talking about all relationships. And again, what's very interesting is that girls tend to struggle more with social relationships when they're teenagers than boys do. And that's often because girls have very intense one-to-one relationships, whereas boys tend to have groups of friends, generally around a shared interest like football or something like that. Girls have these very intense one-to-one relationships. And those are quite conflictual. They're quite difficult. Girls tend to put much more store in them. And again, because you are the person who gives them emotional resilience, again, girls who have good relationships with their fathers tend to be able to deal with all those sort of social difficulties much more effectively than girls who have difficult relationships with their fathers. So yeah, teenagedom is fun for any parent, but I think as a father, don't underestimate how important you are during that stage. Because again, as I mentioned earlier, the whole evolution of fatherhood was there to get rid of, to basically give the kids to the dad. And mum had to, it was because there was no contraception, was pregnant, breastfeeding, whatever. She was busy. So dad took the toddlers, took the kids, took the adolescents and said, you'll come in with me. And you are still doing that today. It's really important.
It's really interesting to listen to that because some of the most successful, confident women that I know still have very strong relationships with their fathers.
Yeah. Because it's also, we live from just a really slightly boring philosophical point of view. We still live in quite a strongly male world. Mm. And if you've had a dad in your life going, do you know what? You're amazing. And your opinion matters. And you can do this. And you can stand up against that. That gives that girl, that woman, huge self-confidence to go into quite a male world and actually say, do you know what? Actually, what I say does matter. And I'm going to open my mouth and I'm going to say what I think. And you're going to value it because my dad did.
Yeah. Feel like the answer is yes. But does it also support the mental health of the father as well, having that healthy relationship with older children? Because I'd always be my mum's child, even if when I'm 40 and she's 80, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She'll always look at me.
It absolutely does. And again, some really interesting stuff recently has come out about showing what a two-way relationship that mental health picture is.
Yeah.
Because we always see maybe babies in particular as being quite lacking any agency really in the relationship with their parents. But actually, it's a two-way thing. So yes, your baby gets a lot from you nurturing them, holding them, playing with them, but also you get a lot from that yourself. And that carries on through life, is that it's a two-way relationship.
Yeah.
And that you, yes, also get positive benefits from interacting with your children.
So it really is what you put in now, you do get back at some point later in
life. Absolutely. Absolutely. No, those early stages are really important. And that's why we do have to encourage men, however difficult it can be, and particularly when they are experiencing a delay in bonding, which the vast majority of men do after birth, is to really just encourage them to get in there as soon as they can. Because the sooner you do it, the sooner the bond builds, but also then you're building that foundation for that relationship throughout life with that child.
Yeah. I could literally talk all day about this subject. And I read your book and I was like, oh, this is phenomenal. It was almost like you'd written it for me.
Really, that's what it was written. It was written for dad. So I'm glad you said that.
And if anyone's out there and is questioning their position as a father, definitely pick up a copy of your book and give it a read. Or I wish I'd read the book while I was going through my fertility treatment.
Yeah.
But it wasn't out then. But if you're in pre-pregnancy and you're going through that journey of the challenges that fertility bring, pick it up and give it a read. I really can't recommend it highly enough. It's an amazing book. Phenomenal.
Oh, thank you very much.
If there's a man listening who's about to be a father or has just been a newly become a father, what's the one bit of advice you'd give him?
I would say, it's probably quite a long sentence. I would say, number one, you're good at this. You're instinctively good at this. And secondly, you are uniquely important. So be empowered by that and hopefully be empowered enough to demand your place at the top table, basically, because you should be there. And don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
That is amazing advice. Thank you.
Just got goosebumps from that. It's amazing. Amazing.
Anna, we are so grateful that you came on to the podcast.
Well, for me, it's been a good chat.
Yeah, absolutely. We've both talked about your book a lot because of how much it's meant to us. And if anyone else wants to get their hands on that, what is it and where can they get it?
Okay, it's called The Life of Dad, The Making of the Modern Father, and all good bookshops, obviously, and obviously on Amazon.
And where, if people want to get in contact with you or find you?
I have a website, animation.com, but also I'm on Instagram and Twitter. So I post a lot of sort of videos and stuff on Instagram. So, and there, I think I'm at Dr. Animation on Instagram. So give me a search and I'm always waffling away on there.
Oh, no, it's great. It's really, I can vouch. The videos are great. Thank you so much.
Amazing. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you found the value in today's conversation, please follow the show and share with someone who might benefit. We'd love to hear from you. Share your questions and feedback on our social media channels or email us at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com.
and follow the show on Instagram at the Male Fertility Podcast.
And subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is the Male Fertility Podcast.
Remember, you're not alone. See you next time.